So how many people here have public-facing sites? Only four. No, okay, a lot of people. One of the things that matters a lot when you have kind of a public-facing site is search engine optimization. And if you look at the log headers of your server, you know, you'll probably find that a large proportion of your traffic to your site is based on search engines, whether it's Google, Bing, Yahoo, or what have you. And you know, one of the challenges has been in the past, how do you optimize your site for search engines? A lot of the features I've talked about here that we're adding to ASP.NET make it easier for you as a developer to take advantage of it. But if you have a large site, how do you know that you have search engine problems? Or you have SEO problems within the site, finding it and knowing the best practices is kind of a little bit of a black art science that people end up having to learn. So one of the things that we shipped, the final release of, actually I think 2 weeks ago, is this thing called the IIS SEO Toolkit, which is a free download that makes it much easier for you to optimize and analyze your site for search engine traffic. How many people here have used the SEO Toolkit? Oh, cool. Well, not many people. That's not really cool, but it's useful for me because you get to see something new. So you can get the SEO Toolkit by using something called the Web Platform Installer. How many people have used the Web Platform Installer? Okay, a few people. If you haven't, basically it's a tool. You can go to Microsoft.com/web to download. It's a free tool. It basically, when you run it, it'll analyze your system to see what's actually installed on the box. In terms of from a web deployment stack perspective, it works with IS5, IS6, IS7, Windows XP, all versions. And basically, you can go in, you can customize what modules are enabled on your web server, and both in terms of the built-in modules that come with Windows, as well as a whole bunch of additional downloads that we offer now that you can take advantage of. And one of them is the Search Engine Optimization Toolkit. So if you just want to check it and click install, it'll then download it and install it on your machine. All the ASP.NET modules are here as well. We also have applications, so if you want to install something like in Bronco or .NET Nuke, or even things like WordPress, you can basically single-click install. It'll download it, install it in your, on your system, and away you go. So it's a free download. Highly recommended. One of these extensions I mentioned is this SEO Toolkit. Which makes it much easier for you to analyze your site and check it for search engine optimization purposes. And sometimes I actually ask people to tell me a site that they run so I can actually do it on the fly, do a search engine analysis review. But it turns out it's often embarrassing. So rather than ask for an unlucky volunteer, I thought, I'm actually going to embarrass myself. And I'm going to use my site, which is scottgear.com, which is a site I wrote, I guess, in 2005, since all the content stopped in about a month after I wrote the site. So my tech had 2005 slides. It was the last presentation I've apparently done. It's a fairly simple site. I think I'm using a project template that came with 2005. It's like 7 or 8 pages, ASPX pages. So I have a home, I have presentations, I have a little photo gallery that I wrote myself with pictures. And so you can kind of browse pictures and see stuff. I used to have my blog here, and then I redirected it to weblogs.aspx. So I have a blogs.aspx that just redirects me to my new blog. And so it's a simple page, you know, site, 7 or 8 pages. You might think, you know, there probably are some SEO violations on this site, but how many could there possibly be? Well, let's go see. So when I install the search engine optimization tool in IIS, I can double-click this. Brings up a little report. I can say, let's create a new report. We're going to call it Scott Goo Sweden. I can point at any server. So it doesn't actually require that IIS7 is running my site. I could point this at an Apache server. I could point it to IIS6. So you know, basically download and install this. It does require either Vista or Win7 or Windows Server 2008 on your machine running the tool, but the remote server can be any site using any operating system. You can configure like how many URLs to follow, whether you download only 100K per URL, and you can decide whether you want to log into the site or just be anonymous. I'm just going to hit OK. And what this is then going to go ahead and do is basically pretend that it's a search engine, and it's going to crawl my site just like Google or Bing would. And so it's literally going out over the network here, skyguru.com, bringing down the homepage, finding all the links, crawling the site, just like a search engine would, and it's basically analyzing the URLs. And so we've done, 300 URLs. And you might say, well, gosh, there's only 7 or 8 pages on your site. Well, it turns out a lot of those ASPX pages are parameterized pages, and from a search engine perspective, it's going to think of those things as separate URLs. And so right now we're up to 400 and some URLs, and it's generated a report for me. And what's, I think, really impressive is I'm averaging over 100 violations per ASPX page, which is, it's not easy to do that. So basically 406 URLs it crawled and 713 violations that it found on my site. And so what's great about this is not only does it tell you that you suck, but it tells you all the ways that you suck and how you can unsuck yourself. And so what basically showing here are all the 700 violations it found with my site, categorized by the type of violation and what it is. And what's nice is you can open it up and actually see details about it. And so, for example, let's start with a simple thing to fix, which is the alt attributes missing from the images within my photo gallery. And so this is bad from both a accessibility purpose, but also means search engines have no idea that that was a lion picture that I showed you. It just thinks it's an image. And so it describes for you why it's bad. It describes how to fix it with a accurate and descriptive keyword. And it shows you each of the individual URLs on the site that actually had the violation. And you can even see, if you hit the content, it'll actually show you the actual URL on the site that had the violation. My description attribute's missing for the meta tag within my head section for all my pages. Again, I can go in and do this. The search engines will know how to categorize it. It'll even say, hey, I recommend that you make it between 25 and 150 characters long, because it turns out that's the right number that Google will give you a nice sweet spot in terms of relevancy ranking. And now with ASP.NET 4, you can programmatically do that. You could also then write code with older releases to do it as well. This is a subtle one that a lot of people don't realize, which is search engines are case sensitive in your URLs. So I have album ID equals 1, and I have lowercase album ID equals 1 in two different places in my site where I'm linking to things. Linking to the same page, same content, Google and Bing think those are two completely different URLs and two completely different contents. And so they'll actually take all the content I have and basically half the relevancy ranking on them because it thinks that they're duplicated in two places. And so basically this is saying, hey, you pick on one format in terms of casing. Here are all the different places and URLs on the site that you violated. And again, that's the actual picture. But you can actually see the HTML highlighted inside the tool where there's problems. I have unnecessary redirects. So I mentioned that blog page that redirected to my blog. Right now, I just actually have a blog to ASPX that's doing a response.redirect. Because it's using response.redirect, that is a temporary redirect from a search engine perspective. I should either set the header to be a correct permanent redirect or use the new permanent response.redirect permanent redirect feature that's in .NET 4. Because right now, search engines aren't going to actually pass through on that redirect and give me relevancy ranking. Other ones that are missing here, the canonical format here, this is, again, interesting in the sense of I have one place where I actually do size and then album in my query string, another place where I then do album and size, and it's basically saying get the order consistent of your parameters, because otherwise search engine's going to basically think it's two separate things. Anyway, lots of violations I could go through and embarrass myself more, but the good news is fixing all these things probably takes less than an hour, and if I did this, I'd probably see the traffic on my site go up by 20 or 30%. That's the kind of impact that having good search engine relevancy can have. Highly recommend download the tool. Again, you can run it on any server, so you can, embarrass your friends. It's a free tool, so there's no good reason not to use it. Other improvements then in ASP.NET 4 in the data space. We now have the ASP charting controls built into .NET 4. This is actually available as a web download today with .NET 3.5 SP1. This basically gives you an ASP chart control that now will automatically generate image graphs. You can do it 3D. You can do all the standard charting. You can do pretty advanced financial analysis style or statistical analysis style graphs. They also have some AJAX behavior in a couple cases, so you can do client-side updates as well after the fact. We have a new ASP query extender control that you can use for doing filtering and searching-like scenarios against link providers. This is kind of a challenge today. Anytime you're doing searching on a site, it's usually rife with SQL injection attack opportunities. It's also doubly hard to do with link unless you use kind of a dynamic link library, which I actually do have a blog post on. But you have to write some code to programmatically construct kind of like and where clauses with link. The query extender control makes it pretty easy where you can dynamically do like and where clauses against any link data source control in ASP.NET. It'll work with all the standard data controls as well. Lots of new improvements in the data space with dynamic data. New field templates, new entity template support, we support many-to-many and inheritance support with dynamic data. We also then have what's called model-aware validation support that's been added that you can use with all your existing ASP.NET WebForm controls as well. So the scenario here is if you're using a grid view control or details view control, and you go into edit mode and someone edits and enters some invalid data and you hit save, one of the challenges is you today need to actually handle an event that does the update, sync whether or not an exception occurred as part of the update, and when it does, figure out how to transfer the error message, use find control, and then tweak the UI within the control to display an appropriate error message to a user. And if you want to wire it up so client-side validation occurs, you need to actually manually put the validators inside the controls in order to do that with control templates. With new support in .NET 4, you can actually do what's called model-based validation. And so you can actually take, for example, your product object or, say, an order object, and decorate it with data annotations, which we'll look at a little bit later on in my second talk. And now the data grid and other built-in controls will automatically honor those validations and output the appropriate ASP.NET validation controls that actually display user-friendly error messages in the right case. It removes a whole bunch of code and also enables you to kind of keep your app very dry so that instead of repeating yourself on multiple forms with multiple validation error messages, you can apply the validation messages once on an object and then have all your UI controls pick it up. And that can be used not just with dynamic data scenarios, but that'll work with any ASPX page and any data control. The question is, what if you want to override that? So we only do it by default if you have to write one line of code that says enable it. If you don't do that, then it won't actually happen. And then you can also go in still in template editing mode and override on a specific case basis as well. So it's full extensibility and overriding support. Lots of improvements also coming. This is not ASP.NET specific, but since pretty much every ASP.NET app has data access, lots of improvements coming in with data access with .NET 4. I actually don't run the data team, so when I say improvements, I'm not saying it about my own team, but another team. Lots of improvements to link to SQL. There's a number of improvements coming as part of that with .NET 4. There's also then major improvements coming with the Entity Framework with .NET 4. I'd say Entity Framework in general, which came out in .NET 3.5 SP1, has had some mixed feedback with a lot of people complaining about features that are either missing or wanting certain additional capabilities. And I think the ADO.NET team has done a pretty good job in .NET 4 of listening to that feedback and adding a bunch of them. So things like model first and plain old CLR or POCO object support is now built in. Lazy loading capability is now on by default and built in. Pluralization and singularization support so that when you model something against a database, it'll take products and create a product object is now built in. And it's also flexible so you can actually import different languages and have different rules depending on whatever language you're using. Full link support, Some better support for foreign key scenarios and exposing foreign keys on model objects. This isn't always great from an OO perspective, but it's very useful in stateless web scenarios. It's now an option in order to add those to your entities. There's now new disconnected APIs for enabling in-tier scenarios. So if you want to retrieve an entity, transfer it over, say, a WCF service, and then reconnect it later, that's now built in. And then there's now T4 customization support, so that anything you do in the designer, you can now completely customize the code generation that occurs within the application. Gives you much more control over the code that's emitted and much more customization support. Also available as a web download in the .NET 4 timeframe is something we call code only as an option for Entity Framework. This allows you to avoid having to create any mapping file that's in XML or with a designer. Instead, basically generate plain old CLR objects that just have standard fields and properties that don't derive from any base class. And then you can use a nice Fluent API to actually map that as a persistence layer to the database. For test-driven development kind of domain-driven development purposes, gives you a lot of flexibility and is a nice option to have. Talk a little bit about Ajax and JavaScript. Lots of improvements here. Let's talk a little bit about some of the editing improvements first from a tooling perspective. Much faster IntelliSense. So when you load a large library, you should see IntelliSense hopefully start immediately and be very responsive. This actually shows you some of the improvements in terms of perf relative to VS 2008 and VS 2010 based on a variety of different libraries. In general, we've tried to keep IntelliSense under a second in terms of responsiveness. Basically, we find anything under a second, people don't even notice. And now, pretty much all the major libraries are substantially under a second in terms of IntelliSense loading. XJS, which is the one outlier, though, is still over 6x faster in terms of loading. So you should see much more responsiveness, and we support an even broader range of Ajax libraries out there that you can use. Other features that we're adding is better support with IntelliSense for same file editing. So today with VS 2008, you can add what's called an XML comment section to your JavaScript files for comments. And when you do that, and you reference that file from another JavaScript file, you'll get full IntelliSense information with the information from that snippet. With 2008, though, you'll find that that only works in separate files, and it doesn't actually work in the same file that you actually have that method. And what we've done in 2010 is we now support it everywhere. So once you add that comment section, you'll basically get clean IntelliSense everywhere. We're also then added much more robust error handling so that when you do have an error inside the file, either a typo that you've done or often cases where you're doing some fairly tricky JavaScript that's working with the browser DOM, our IntelliSense engine is much more forgiving and will continue executing the JavaScript and giving you real-time IntelliSense support for it. So, let's see some demos. So, let's do a couple things here. So I'm going to zoom in to show off some simple support that's in VS 2008 today, which is if I declare a variable and assign it a value, I'll get some IntelliSense based on the type of the value that assigned. So in this case here, I have assigned name a string. I get IntelliSense for a string. If I assign it a number, my IntelliSense, oops, oh, notice the forgiveness. But anyway, now if I assign it a number, it will give me IntelliSense based on a number. So this existed today, exists today, obviously continues to work in VS 2010. What we've also then done is added support for dynamic values. So if I do window slash Sweden equals Scott, you'll notice here what I've done is I've dynamically injected a variable into the JavaScript namespace using the window API. It will now give you IntelliSense dynamically based on the code there for that particular variable. Which is kind of hard to do and not something we support today. We also then are adding support. So if I do for var I equals 0, 0, I less than 10. Like that. You'll notice. And you might think this is just a stupid pet trick, but you're wrong. It turns out a lot of the popular JavaScript libraries actually employ techniques like this to keep their JavaScript library size down and very small. And so they'll actually dynamically generate both functions as well as variables on the fly using the window object and using kind of dynamic generation techniques like this. And what it means now is you get full IntelliSense support within the IDE when you do that. And what's nice is if you have code like this where you say alert foo, if you throw error, you'll still basically get IntelliSense continue to work everything continues to work. So much better support for IntelliSense and for recovery. This works for both. And we also then just added a bunch of support here, for example, where we pick up library-specific features. So I can say declare namespaces in ASP.NET Ajax using this type.register namespace helper method. You'll now get full IntelliSense for the namespace within the IDE. This works for both ASP.NET Ajax, and then also you'll find, say, for example, this is the Yahoo library, Yahoo UI. If you type yahoo.scott.guthrie, you'll basically see, we can support alternative libraries with IntelliSense as well for doing namespaces. And then lastly, here's an example of jQuery. And you can see this is using kind of selectors and so on. You'll notice basically you still have full JScript or jQuery IntelliSense as well flow out throughout the entire document. So lots of rich support. In addition to supporting ASP.NET Ajax, when you create a new ASP.NET, both web form and MVC application, we now by default, unless you're using the empty template, we'll actually add jQuery into your project as well. And we now support that both with IntelliSense and at runtime as well. Other improvements in the Ajax space, much richer support for client-side Ajax. We have new support for what we call client templating. So you can do client-side data binding. And so this is a nice little library. Gives you a nice declarative way that you can put markers inside your HTML and then basically data bind a value on the client and display it. And so we have libraries for both retrieving the data, doing change notifications in JavaScript, and then also doing the templating mechanism like so in order to display it. The binding with this templating mechanism is two-way, so you can also take changes back and then persist them back to the database in a nice, clean fashion. And basically our strategy with ASP.NET Ajax has been partner with jQuery, and basically we use jQuery functionality where jQuery already has functionality, and then we're basically adding functionality around that. And so things like this templating syntax and data binding complement jQuery. You can use jQuery selectors with this, and you can use a nice combination in order to build a pretty clean model. Other features that we're doing, you can actually take advantage of this particular feature today, even with ASP.NET 2 and 3, is a new CDN or content delivery network that we've deployed around the world. CDNs basically work by putting what are called edge cache servers in strategic locations everywhere. It sounds so strategic locations. I love the way that sounds. But basically, it means you have a cache server. There's probably some here in Sweden or here in Stockholm. There's probably even ones in Stockholm in different parts of Stockholm. And then obviously around Sweden and around the world. And what that means is when someone is visiting your site, if you reference a JavaScript file from our CDN, we'll actually resolve it from the closest server from wherever they are located in the world. And that basically means the app starts up faster, means you don't have to pay the bandwidth costs we do, and it means that if someone goes to my site and I reference the same library and then goes to your site and use the same URL off the CDN, they don't have to download anything that second time. It's already in their cache and they can go ahead and use it. We support jQuery as well as ASP.NET Ajax with the CDN. Our script manager control in ASP.NET 4 now has an enable CDN property. Set it to true and will automatically download the files from our CDN. I'm going to talk in much more depth in the second talk about ASP.NET MVC. So I'm going to postpone some of that there. But basically, at a high level, we've introduced this new option called MVC. It doesn't replace web forms. It's basically another option that people can use at the presentation layer. Builds on top of the same ASP.NET core. Lots of reasons why people like it. We'll cover that in more depth in the second talk. Bunch of new features are coming in MVC 2, and I'll actually be demoing most of these features again also in the second talk. What's nice is ASP.NET MVC 2 will be built into VS 2010 and .NET 4, and so when those ship, file a new project, you can choose ASP.NET MVC 2 and get full support from that as well within Visual Studio. For people that like, how many people don't use the designer today inside VS and instead prefer a text-only experience? Or editor experience. Some people do. Some people are going like, why would you turn off the designer? Well, good news, you don't have to turn off the designer. But for people that do prefer a designerless experience and instead have a rich text experience, we have a new option for web development, what we call a new profile option. What this does is when VS first starts up, you can say, I want to pick the web development profile, which will give you a profile that looks like this, which is the traditional profile we've used. We have pulled out a few things just to pop the editor a little bit more. There's also then this code optimized profile, which will actually turn off the designer option and hide it from the tab bar and basically maximize the text viewing experience on your system. So if you're someone who prefers a very editor-based experience, there's now this easy option to do. What's nice is you can go into tools options from either of these profiles and either turn on or turn off features from whichever profile you've picked. So you can also customize the experience to be however you want, and you can have either as much or as little design time experience within the IDE as you care for. Not going to demo TFS today, although someone later today. No. TFS 2010 has gotten a lot richer with the VS 2010 release. Both in terms of capabilities as well as kind of simplicity to set up, use, and install. How many people here use TFS today? A lot of people have. It probably took about 15, 20 minutes to set up. Yeah, 15, 20 minutes spread out over many hours, compounded. So TFS today can take a while to set up. It's kind of an enterprise-grade source control system, and with that sometimes has enterprise-grade setup experience. One of the things we've done in 2010 is simplified it quite a bit. There's now an option where it takes less than 20 minutes to set up end-to-end and get everything working. We now run on both Windows servers as well as Windows client machines. So if you just have side machine you want to enable it on, you can. It'll also work on domain controllers if you have like a small business server and that's the only server inside your organization. It also now supports SQL Express as an option, so it no longer requires a full copy of SQL. You can also install it without having to require SharePoint on the box. So literally end-to-end on a clean machine, less than 20 minutes, you can be up and running and have TFS installed. TFS gives you much more than just source control. It also gives you bug and work item tracking. It also gives you an automated build server with continuous integration support. In the MVC talk, I'm going to talk about much more about unit testing and some of the improvements we're doing around that in this with both MVC and VS 2010. The nice thing about TFS is you can set it up so that anytime anyone checks in a source change in a project, it'll automatically kick off a build, run all the unit tests, and if the unit tests don't pass, you can actually reject the check-in. And that way you can keep your project in a very clean, consistent state. What's kind of cool is, it takes less than 20 minutes to install TFS. It takes less than 5 minutes to create a new project, enable continuous integration and build support, and enable that check-in gate option. So much cleaner, much faster, nice way to add some good code hygiene into your system. Yep. Good question. So the question is, how long does it take to upgrade it from 2008? I actually don't know the answer to that one. Shoot me mail and I can find out for you. You can use TFS, you can use Visual Studio 2010 against TFS 2008. So you can, it doesn't require you to upgrade your TFS if you already have TFS running with TFS 2008. So you can use VS 10 against that. You can also, there's a patch you can download for VS 2008, which will allow it to work against TFS 2010. So you can support those mixed mode environments. We also, a couple weeks ago, announced an acquisition that we did of something called TeamPrize, which provides TFS client support for non-Windows systems, including an Eclipse plugin. So if you're an environment that has both Java and .NET, or have a combination of different operating systems that you're doing development on, you can now all use TFS, regardless of whether you're using .NET or not. But please use .NET. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Sorry, can you repeat that question? I didn't actually hear the first part. I heard the, have you done something for that? What was the first part? Oh, we turned on the microphone. We gave him the microphone, we didn't turn it on.
Today you can run the TFS with two servers with proxy.
Yep.
Okay, that's better.
Yeah, that's
you can install it, TFS with two server today and with the second one as a proxy, but that only proxies the code, the source coding. The other parts, the...
The bugs and work item?
Yeah, the file and then the portal stuff is always on the master server. Is there any enhancements on that part?
It's a good question. I don't actually know in the proxy situation what the enhancements are. I think there are changes that we've done. But if you send me email, I can hook you in with Brian Harry, who runs that team, and I can get an answer for you on that. So just send me email at scottgu@microsoft.com, and I'll follow up on that. The other nice thing about TFS 2010 is it's now built into all MSDN subscriptions, so it's no additional cost. If you're not an MSDN, and this includes MSDN Professional, if you're not an MSDN subscriber, there's also we'll have a low-cost version that you can download or you can get for just standalone Visual Studio, non-MSDN as well. So it's now very inexpensive to set up. Other quick ASP.NET Core improvements, then we'll do a break. Lots of improvements to our cache system. We've always had output caching with ASP.NET since the beginning, but it hasn't been super extensible. We've now, with ASP.NET 4, made it extensible so you can plug in as well as replace our cache with your own implementation. Next year, we're going to be shipping something we call App Fabric, which is a free server offering on top of Windows Server. And that includes a new capability we're calling Velocity, which is a distributed cache. What that means is you can now install a cache server inside your environment, and then you can have multiple web servers running ASP.NET that all share the same cache server. And that way, now if you output cache content or you want to cache data, you can store it and have all your web servers pick it up instead of duplicating it using the in-memory cache that comes built into ASP.NET. We have new pre-start events that you can now hook inside your application so that you can, on startup, before the first user hits your app, you can actually download and grab data and have your caches all warmed up. We have new perf monitoring support, which is great for both enterprises and hosting, so you can identify where your servers are spending their time on a per-app basis, even within the same worker process. And we have new syntax for automatically HTML encoding content. So if you do anger bracket percent colon, or this will automatically output as well as HTML encode whatever content you have within that, which is great for avoiding cross-site scripting attacks. I mentioned a little bit about deployment earlier in that you can now have web.config files for different staging test deployment environments. It's now built into the tool, easy to manage and change. We also then have new support inside VS 2010 for what we call MS Deploy, which is a server-based deployment technology that we actually shipped two or three months ago that you can use today from a command line with both IS6 and IS7 servers as a way to easily package up and deploy remotely server apps either to a single machine or across a web farm. And what we're doing in VS 2010 is basically giving you built-in IDE support so that at any point on a project you can just right-click and say publish, and you can point to a web server and basically deploy the application. And what's nice about this is it will actually package up SSL certs, custom registry entries, file ACLs, and we also have an option in VS so that it will automatically download the schema as well as any of the data from within an application, generate a SQL file, copy it to the remote server, and then execute it against the database. So you can actually do database deployment as well in a one-click way for all your web apps. And this works both inside the IDE as well as from a command line. And what's great is all this stuff works over HTTP and in delegated hosting environments. So if you have a low-cost shared hosting plan, you'll be able to actually use all this deployment capability with it. You don't need to be an admin on the box in order to enable it. So this is the end of the first talk. Hopefully you've seen there's a bunch of features coming for VS 2010 and .NET 4 from a web development perspective. There's a whole bunch more web development features I haven't talked about yet. We have a whole second talk on ASP.NET MVC that'll come later, which comes in this time frame. But even after I cover all that, there's still more stuff I wasn't able to reach. Hopefully you've seen, though, there's a lot of stuff coming. Hopefully a lot of things that are both new and let you do new things, but also just kind of make your existing environment and existing projects better, and you can immediately take advantage of without having to learn a bunch of new concepts. The other thing is, obviously, with .NET 4 and VS 2010, there's a bunch of non-web capabilities coming. Things like WPF, a lot of improved WPF support, both in the runtime as well as design time. Built-in Silverlight support within VS 2010, which I'll actually show later in my Silverlight talk. Lots of enterprise capabilities beyond what I've talked about with TFS for doing enterprise modeling, test work, you know, work item and requirements. Lots of improvements at the language level with both C# 4 as well as VB 11 from a language perspective. Common things with C# that we've added that people have asked for in the past, things like name parameters and optional parameters, things like the dynamic keyword, covariance and contravariance support. In VB, we've added things like improved multi-line continuation, automatic properties, and a bunch of other capabilities. So lots of things you can take advantage of from a language perspective. VS 2010 will have built-in SharePoint support, so you can now create, edit, debug SharePoint apps directly within the IDE. You can also now use SharePoint with TFS, so you can actually check in with source control all your changes. Lots of workflow improvements, WCF improvements. I could go on and on and on. Lots of things. This is just a brief taste of it today, but hopefully lots of things to look forward to. So with that and this talk, I think there's another talk afterwards, and then I'm going to be coming back later in the day. So thanks a bunch.
Thanks.